Question of Balance with your host, Ruth Coplin. In the first hour of the show, we ask questions that matter, discussing topics with local relevance and global significance. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Coplin.
I hope you've had a fulfilling week this week. It's gone well for you. If you're a regular listener, thanks for coming back to the show. And if you're a new listener, just to get you up to speed, this is a two-hour show combining thought-provoking conversations out and about on the street with in-depth arts interviews with special guests from the arts. So we get the perspective of ordinary people on the street, and we also have some great national and international artists. For the arts interview in the second hour, I'm pleased to be interviewing founder and executive director of the Bahamas International Film Festival, Leslie Vanderpool. The Bahamas International Film Festival, or BIFF, as it's fondly known, is a non-profit organisation dedicated to providing the local Bahamian community and international visitors with a diverse presentation of films from around the world. And Leslie launched the festival in 2004 as a non-profit dedicated to creating a cine-literate arts community, bridging cultures, gaining knowledge, and attracting a targeted tourism sector through the film industry. And the festival has showcased more than 800 films from countries around the world and has attracted such luminaries as Johnny Depp, Nicolas Cage, Lawrence Fishburne, Daryl Hannah, Sir Sean Connery, Deborah Messing, Sidney Poitier, Danny Glover, and more. And Leslie received a bachelor's degree in international relations before going on to pursue her passion for theatre and filmmaking, which I imagine has been very useful in producing and founding this festival. She's also been really innovative in taking filmmaking into schools, where she's taught all aspects of filmmaking and has also created unique cultural events such as summer films in the square and theatre in the park. So Leslie currently spends her time between California and the Bahamas advancing the film industry. Really looking forward to talking to her about what it takes to put on such a huge and successful film festival in such an unusual location. And in this hour, we're considering, what qualities do you want in a world leader? I've been out and about getting opinions on the street to get us thinking. As usual, I'm just stopping people. I have no agenda in advance, not trying to push any particular point of view, not trying to equally weight opinion, just featuring the thoughts of people who agree to be interviewed. And I'm just hoping that by listening to other people, we will, perhaps start thinking ourselves what we think about the topic. Well, let's hear my first conversation with Mike.
Yeah, wait for it.
Hello, my name is Ruth Coplin. It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thanks for agreeing to being interviewed. What is your name?
I'm Mike Souza.
Well, thanks so much for stopping for our Out and About feature. And this week we're considering, what qualities do you want in a world leader? I'm wondering, do you think a leader needs different qualities today than in the past?
That's a good question. You know, I want someone to be honest. I want someone to be stern. I don't want a pushover, you know.
Right.
If someone's going to be a leader, they should lead from the front. They should practice the qualities that they are preaching.
Right. So do you feel, for instance, in that case, that somebody's personal life should reflect those same qualities? Do you feel that the standards morally in their personal life should be the same as in their political life? Or do you think it's irrelevant if you're a good leader?
Well, it depends. If on his downtime he likes massacring kittens, then obviously that wouldn't be really cool. So, you know, I would say personal life does matter, but at the same time, I don't want to look into his emails, you know,
yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Right. Is it more important to you that a leader shares your beliefs or your values?
No, because I'm weird.
Okay.
No,
but
I mean,
seriously, you know, like, do you think it's a lot of people want their leader to have their exact beliefs, or do you think as long as their values are congruent with what your values are, you would be happy?
As long as it's right, because the thing is, if you try to please everyone, you're not going to please everyone.
Right.
You know, so I think that You know, I don't know. I mean, yeah, obviously if you like the guy and you want him to be your leader, there should be some, you know, resemblance into what you believe. But at the same time, you can't be all butthurt if he believes or he wants to do something else with other people that you don't agree on. It's just can't please everyone, you know?
Obviously, to lead, you need a lot of self-confidence, and you were talking about, you know, leading from the front and all of that, but I'm wondering how much you rate humility and an openness to continuous learning in a leader.
A scale of 1 to 10? Or
anything you like. Do you think a leader should be open to continually learning, or do you feel it's more important just to think that you're right no matter what you do?
Both. You know? I think there should be both. I think you should be strong into what you actually believe, but be open-minded to make changes. Because as a, you know, a community, as, you know, whatever we are in society, there you go, society, it's always changing, it's always growing, so different issues are always going to pop up. Yeah. So as long as you're willing to understand and adapt and learn, but still be stern to what you know is right, then yeah, sure, why not, you know?
Do you feel America, a leader of America, needs different qualities to other countries, or is it a universal quality of leadership?
Well, you can't, like, that's the same thing. You can't please everyone, so it's what they believe should be best for America, and what that is listen to the people and listen to what we want, you know.
There seems to be, I am an American citizen, but coming from outside America, I've noticed there seems to be a thing in America where people are wary of leadership candidates who seem more intellectual than the average person, whereas in Europe, people want their leaders to be more intelligent than them. And do you have any comments on that? Is that something you've perceived?
Well, if you look at the people that are running for president, no one's intelligent, so it's... So, you know, I don't know. It's just, I don't see any good candidates that we have.
In the past, John Kerry fell foul of that in terms of people thinking, well, he's some elite, you know, kind of intellectual that no one can relate to or whatever. I couldn't have a beer with him. I mean, do you want to be able to have a beer and feel like you're equal to your leader, or would you want them to be superior to you if they're leading the country?
It depends. Okay. You know, it depends on the situation. Like, say, for instance, Bill Belichick's the coach of the New England Patriots. I wouldn't want to have a beer with him because he's scary, but at the same time, I would want to play for him because he's a winner.
Right.
You know, You look at Jim Tom Sula, the coach of the 49ers. Yeah, he's a nice guy. I'd probably have a beer with him, but I wouldn't want to play for him because he sucks as a coach.
So how would that translate into what you want from a leader? Do you think that would translate into you wouldn't necessarily want to have a beer with them, but you would want them to be your leader?
Probably. I'd have to respect the guy. You know, it's more about, I guess that was more just about respect.
Okay.
You know, it's like with Bill Belichick, yeah, he's a winner, but at the same time, he's stern, he puts his iron foot down. But I should use a different coach. Who's another winning coach? Mike McCarthy for the Green Bay Packers. I'd probably have a beer with him, and I'd probably play for him.
Okay. And there's a female talk show host called Rebecca Costa who's recently said that she doesn't think we should elect a female president, not based on who that might be, but at all, because she doesn't feel that they would be able to negotiate issues in the Middle East because they don't respect women in the Middle East. Is that something you feel like we should take into account, or do you feel like we should just think, well, that's wrong, and that we're not going to kind of kowtow to beliefs that we think are wrong?
No, that doesn't bother me. That's one thing. Now you're, as a country, as America, we believe in equal rights. So now we're giving in to what they think as not having equal rights, you know? So
yeah.
I think with that, I think we should elect whoever we feel is the right candidate for a leader, no matter what the case is. And they don't like it, too bad, you know?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your opinions. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my on-the-street conversations about this week's topic, what qualities do you want in a world leader? We're going to a break now, but I'll be back with more conversation after these messages.
Like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland. Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Oceans flat,
It's a question of balance music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm the second generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com.
Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my on-the-street conversations this hour for the Out and About feature, where I go on the street and talk to people about a different topic each week. And I'm always very grateful to the people who stop and talk to me. Sometimes the topics, you know, require rather deep thinking, and it's great that people are willing to do that on the street. And I hope that the conversations are giving listeners some food for thought, and perhaps you might wonder how you would have responded to the questions had I stopped you on the street, and if you would have even talked to me at all, perhaps. And remember, if you have any comments, do email me, Ruth at itsaquestionofbalance.com. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Always nice to hear from you. So again, that's Ruth at itsaquestionofbalance.com. And remember, at the website, itsaquestionofbalance.com, you can find podcasts of all previous shows, both topics and amazing guests from the arts. So perhaps have a look there. Well, the next people I spoke to were David, Michelle and Mark. So let's hear what they had to say. Hello, my name's Ruth Copland from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What are your names?
My name is David.
Michelle.
And Mark.
Great. Well, thanks so much for stopping for our Out and About feature. This week, we're considering what qualities do you want in a world leader. Jenny Pert for The Guardian newspaper reports the opinion of Yuri Itch, who's the Itachi manager, on leadership. People tend to seek leaders who have a strong character, clear picture for the future, and talk fluently. They're often praised by the results. However, I think now people also care about the processes used to achieve the outcome. Therefore, future leaders need to have qualities that were not required in the past. These are enthusiasm to create a better world, strong principles while being flexible and realistic, patience, sincerity and fairness, collaboration and ability to work together, taking risks and give the fruits to the people. So I'm just wondering, what qualities do you think a leader should have, and do you think leaders need different qualities today than the past?
Well, I think one common quality the leaders need today, I believe, is the ability to communicate a vision or a perspective about the planet that will move it forward in a positive way.
Right.
personally, I feel like a world leader needs to have compassion for all the people on the planet, and also to think of the world as a living organism and have the same sort of compassion for the world organism, so that any sort of decision-making processes come from a place of how is this affecting the world organism. You know, I think it's really, we get really short-sighted about what's important on the planet, and after basic human needs like healthcare and food are met, which they can be met today with our technology, it's just a matter of like, how greedy do you want to be? And I feel like, for instance, the U.S. is like the greediest planet, or greediest country probably that's ever lived on the planet, and incredibly aggressive. And I think the combination of greed and aggression, which for me is capitalism, that combination has been like the downfall of the planet. And we have to, as a world, and especially from a leader's perspective, get away from that desire and addiction to consume and amass more and more things at the detriment of the whole planet. I mean, we all have to be realistic. The planet is going down fast environmentally, not necessarily socially, but I feel like the people that can amass the power have so much of it now that the perspective of like normal people, and like there's like way more normal people who have compassion than there are the people at the top that seem to have all the power. And I seem somehow, I feel like we've become disassociated, the people have, from the power. Like, for instance, for me, is like government should be about of the people, by the people. And so when you think of politicians and government as separate from who you are, then like there's a huge disconnect, and basically you've allowed them to do whatever they want to. And it's like, as people, I feel like we all have to become stronger leaders, and the only way that we can get a leader at the top who will respect our wishes is if he knows, he or she, or they know that the people that are wanting them to govern them are like compassionate, they're thinking about their needs.
Yeah.
Like, this country has all the wealth it needs so that everyone could have health care free, everyone could have an education through college free, and no one would even feel the pinch. It's just the 1% would amass like maybe 10% less of their wealth.
Yeah.
So why isn't their leader like expressing that perspective?
Right. What about you? What do you think? I mean, obviously, for some people, they feel it's a much more dangerous world now. You know, do you think that affects the qualities of a leader today? What are your thoughts?
It's really sad when people have to come from a place of fear or paranoia. So I think that the ability to ask intelligent questions that will maybe invite multiple perspectives and multiple solutions is what we need from our leaders today.
Okay. What about you? Do you think there's different requirements, or do you think it's always been the same, you know, what's required of a good leader?
Well, the world is definitely changing, and whoop, there's the door. And life is more challenging for leaders and for all of us. But, you know, any leaders need to have empathy for the people that they are supposed to be looking out for. What we see a lot now is mostly they've been co-opted by the 1%, by the corporations, and they've kind of lost sight of taking care of the people who supposedly put them in office. But the people need to be far more engaged than they are right now, as far as paying attention to who they're putting in office and what they're saying and what they're actually doing.
I mean, a very common answer to that is a gentleman who just walked past earlier was like, well, I will never vote for a politician again. I'd vote for anyone rather than someone who's in politics. So I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that. I mean, obviously there's the side of, well, they're not in the political machine, but at the same time, they also don't know any of the processes or how to get legislation passed or, you know, or anything. So what do you feel? Do you feel like a leader needs to have some prior experience in the political system before they become a leader of a country?
I actually do think that any leader needs to have experience, and she has to try out a lot of theories before she's going to find the ones that are going to work for whatever system she's working within.
So do you think it doesn't necessarily need to be within politics? Would you count it as within a company or something, you know, in the community? Or would you think that there is some requirement to know how the political system works?
I really don't know. Someone, you have to get a start somewhere.
Yeah.
So I guess if I had to choose, I would say their prior political experience isn't a prerequisite to success in representing the people.
Right.
I think that possibly Canada is going to be an interesting subject right now because of how they've just reorganized their parliament system, and it seems like very like egalitarian and balanced in terms of like ethnicity and gender balance. So, and it feels like Trudeau has like a genuine vision of a country that doesn't have to rape and pillage and can live in some sort of at least attempted harmony, you know, where all voices can be heard, like Michelle said. And so I'm really excited for Canada. I hope what doesn't happen is that the corporations will somehow, via their ability to manipulate the system, work this all to their advantage, and they'll be gone in 4 years or whatever,
right,
you know.
Yeah. What about you? Do you think it's good to have some political experience? Or?
I think political experience is probably necessary. Countries aren't companies. And you can run a company in a very compassionate and aware way, but they are not companies. The end result, countries are not companies. Our end result shouldn't be profit. It should be, you know, taking care of the masses of the people.
But that's taking care of a corporation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what about, is it more important to you that your leader shares your exact beliefs or that they share your values?
Beliefs, schmaliefs. I mean, if you...
But I mean, the whole American political thing is about beliefs, isn't it?
For instance, I believe we will have come of age as a country when we can have an African-American, lesbian, Jewish, atheist president.
Disabled.
Right. So that, you know, I think we put so much emphasis on what religion we are and, like, things that don't mean anything to me. Values mean a lot more than beliefs.
I mean, is that something you think people think at all? You know, differentiating between beliefs and values?
Not in this country.
No. I think it's all about what you believe and how set you are in those beliefs.
It
kind of depends on where you are. Yeah. See, we're in Santa Cruz, and religious values don't play the role here that they do in vast swaths of the South. And
but I guess what I'm making a differentiation between is religious beliefs and religious and values, because, for instance, you could have Buddhism or Islam or Christianity may all share a value of compassion,
right,
but their beliefs about how that might be expressed could be really different. So if you kind of drop down to a level of values, there's a lot more commonality.
Beliefs are more cultural, and if people need to have a specific cultural belief, that doesn't bother me, so long as it, I don't know what the difference would be, so long as the values are upheld of, like, basically do unto others as you would want them to do unto you. You know, it's so simple, it seems like.
I think that people's commitment, I guess, to their beliefs are roadblocks to progress and to getting along with other people.
Right.
And other systems.
Yeah. And do you expect a world leader to have high values in their personal life? I mean, to be an upright person in their personal life? Or do you think if they're a good leader and they're straying off doing things that are perhaps morally dubious, it doesn't matter if they're doing a good job as a leader? Or do you think that's not possible?
I come from a place where I believe everyone's doing the best they can do.
Right.
Everyone should work.
And everyone is doing the best they can do.
In an ideal world, I mean, this person has got the job. Do you know what I mean? It's like there's a lot of people who might be able to do it. So if they have that job, do you think it's possible to have someone who has the skills to do that job and also is morally upright? Or historically, it seems not, doesn't it? I don't know.
morality is a belief too, and it's like, yeah, what it's made it what made it immoral, for instance, for Bill Clinton to have the sexual affair he had or affairs that he had, other than the fact that society says when you're married to this person, you can't do that with that person. But what if it was okay with Hillary? She said, Bill, I don't care if you get a blowjob once in a while. You know, I understand. There's a lot of stress on the job. We never see each other. Whatever.
Well, if we presuppose that, but, yeah, but as far now, as we know, she didn't know. Right, and therefore, is, then you have lying and betrayal. But then you have lying and betrayal. And if you're willing to lie to your closest ally and your family, why wouldn't you be willing to lie to get what you want in a political situation?
If you're a politician, you're already willing to lie.
Oh, really?
Yes, if you're a politician, because you're going to say what you need to say in order to get elected. Even though you know, even though you would like to be able to do this, but you know with the Congress you have, it's going to be impossible to do this. But you say, this is what you're going to do, even though you know you're not going to be able to do it. You are lying.
Yeah. I mean, that's fairly cynical, but having said that, I think it's fairly reflective of the American system, because I would say, coming from my perspective, you need so much money to run, that is why that happens. And in countries where there's a limit on how much money you can spend on your campaign, that happens a lot less, because you are more directly representing the people.
Mm-hmm. I believe that people stray morally. You know, I can't say that I've been a morally perfect person in my life. That doesn't mean, like, if I looked at the arc of my life, I wouldn't say I've been a good person most of the time. So, like, I'm more willing to forgive, like, a moral, like a dalliance or an inconsistency than I am to forgive somebody's perpetual or overtime deception or, deceit. Like, for instance, if Bill had just come out and said, yeah, you caught me, that was really stupid, I shouldn't have done it, I'm sorry, to the world, not said, I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Yes.
I think people would have got over it a lot faster, yeah. You know.
I'm not sure if that's true in America, because, you know, it's
the
like people...
The world would have been
yes,
like,
I mean,
totally gone home.
It's like you say, I had a puff of marijuana when I was 16, and that's the end of everything. You know, I mean, it's kind of,
well,
I don't know.
Actually, it's common knowledge that Obama smoked pot in high school and that he hung out with the pot crowd, and everyone knows that. I mean, if you don't know that, you haven't even paid attention, because it's pretty, you know, it's in the mainstream.
It's true, I think that has receded, but...
So marijuana is a little different, because marijuana isn't about, like, a sexual taboo. Sexual taboos are
but
much
like,
stronger.
You know, I don't know how, exactly how long ago, like 20 years ago, I remember there was someone who was running that came out, and then that was the end.
Right.
Well, so I guess things are changing.
Yeah. Look how much has changed in 20 years from a socially moral perspective. So like what's acceptable, same-sex marriage, you know, all of that. It's like there's a sea change, and I think all of that is good, you know, and I don't know if, like, you know, like I say, if whatever people's personal arrangements are around sex, to me, the morality is whether or not there's deception involved and how long it went on and, like, you know, whatever.
Just finally, there's an idea of leadership, which is leading by following. I'm just wondering what you think a leader should be doing, whether they should be innovating, driving forward new things, or whether they should be really just trying to do what they feel the people want them to do.
Listening, looking for sound advice, looking for alternatives to the status quo is what I think is a value and a belief that I have, and I think that's a good skill set to have for leaders.
Yeah. What about you?
I think there needs to be, like, an overall vision. It needs to be something that is, it needs to be a vision that's compatible with where the people feel they need to go. That's a very, you know, that's a very difficult thing. You can't pin that down. Okay. You can't just leave it to, you know, to the 51% as far as, because it's like we're not paying that much attention, and we'll make bad choices. There needs to be an overall vision, but it needs to be balanced. It needs to be checked in. He needs to be honest. She needs to be honest with the people
really
of where they want to go, what they want
to
do.
I think there needs to be more listening and less like, I am a leader. Like Donald Trump thinks he is a leader. He's made a lot of money. He thinks that's what a leader is like somebody who just unilaterally believes what they do is right.
Yeah.
And there's so many examples in our culture where a vast majority of the people believe one thing, but our government system does another thing, like healthcare. Yeah. Like 80% of the people believe there should be like a single-payer healthcare system in this country. Yeah. And like, I would say if you ask most people, they would say, yeah, there should be free quality education through college. And there's a lot of social issues like that where the people have one belief system, but it never translates into the decisions that the leaders make at the top.
Yeah.
So they need to be listening more and so somehow be held accountable to the listening instead of accountable to the people with the dollars at the top.
Yeah.
You know? Well, as long as corporations yeah. are people, corporations can give as much as they want,
yeah.
they're going to control the outcome.
Yes. Yeah.
So.
Do you need to go? You got one more question?
Yeah.
So finally, I think I said finally before, but finally.
In conclusion, I just
remembered, there's a talk show host, Rebecca Costa, has a show called The Costa Report, and she came out recently and said that we shouldn't elect a female president.
Oh,
because the situation in the Middle East can't be dealt with by a woman because they don't respect women. Now, obviously, she's, as far as I know, is a feminist and all the rest of it. She's saying it's purely a practical thing, that at this point in time, it may be wrong that they don't respect women, but they don't. And therefore, the chance of a woman leader actually being able to help anything in the Middle East is very low. Do you think we should bow to that, or do you think we should be saying this is wrong and you're going to have to deal with a woman, even if that might be ineffectual?
We need to find the best candidate to meet the needs of the people who she's representing.
So that wouldn't put you off thinking if you voted for a woman, she might not be able to deal with people in the Middle East?
She's representing the American people.
Okay. What about you?
Well, there's also a flip side of that. Think of all the situation a female president would put herself into, that she would make a decision that we as male leaders didn't make correctly, like the Iraq war, for instance. We wouldn't have even gone over there if there was a female leader.
Depending on who it was, yeah.
Depending on who it was. And, and the other side of that argument is the president very, very rarely negotiates directly with the leaders of
a foreign country.
Yes, they usually have their ambassadors, and the guys that are holding the weapons and shooting the people and running the armies, they're all men. They're not going to go, the female leader, if she needs to, will say, yeah, we're going in, we're taking them out, let's go. And, she doesn't have to go physically in there and do it.
No.
But I believe in general, a female leader would make better decisions because she would have more compassion. I believe for whatever reason, women have more compassion for life than men do. Maybe it's the birthing thing, but I just believe it's true.
Yeah.
And
I think the issue is that women are often feel that they have to become like men in positions of power, so it kind of can
Hillary
just
Clinton.
Cancel that out.
Yeah, Hillary Clinton and what's the prime minister from England?
Margaret Thatcher.
Margaret Thatcher, classic examples.
Yeah.
But, I believe there's still room. I think I'm hoping sometime
that it would make a difference.
I think it would be a huge statement.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
Any
and
final thoughts?
Not only statement, but an effective outcome.
Effective outcomes. Sure.
Yeah. And men have been doing such a good job in the Middle East for so long. Why change now?
That's a very good point.
Said. Well said.
Well said. Well, thank you so much, all of you, for your opinions.
All right. Thank you very much.
It was my pleasure
talking to you.
Thank you. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my on-the-street conversations. We're going to another break now, but I'll be back with more conversation after these messages.
Did you know about the Santa Cruz Art League on Broadway in Santa Cruz? Founded in 1919, it's 96 years young and provides a wonderful gallery space for local and national artists. It's a great place to view art with 14 shows a year and also to gain support if you're an artist yourself. There are art classes and weekend workshops, many taught by open studio artists. If you become a member, you receive a newsletter, discounts on classes, gifts and exhibit entries, images of your art on the Art League website, and guaranteed participation in the annual members show. It's also a great place to meet artists. Visit the Santa Cruz Art League at 562 Broadway or the website at scal.org. That's scal.org.
Hi, this is Jackie from Integrity Event Planning. Are you coordinating an event? Don't know how you'll get it all done? Stop sweating the small stuff. We plan everything from family events to fundraising and corporate events. Contact Integrity Event Planning for your next event. Check out our website, integrityeventplanning.com. Integrity, it's what sets us apart. With 16 years of experience, we negotiate with your bottom line and needs in mind. So sit back and relax and let us serve the champagne. We've got this.
For your next event, visit integrityeventplanning.com. That's integrityeventplanning.com.
Dream, baby, dream.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. Welcome back. We're currently listening to this week's On the Street conversations about the topic this week, what qualities do you want in a world leader? And the last people I spoke to this week were Hans, Greg and Andrew. So let's hear what they have to say. Hello, my name's Ruth Copland from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thanks for agreeing to being interviewed. What are your names?
I'm Hans.
I'm Greg.
I'm Andrew.
Well, thanks so much for stopping for our Out and About feature. This week we're thinking about what qualities do you want in a world leader? It seems historically that we valued more the harder qualities of leadership, strength, control, but we live in a world now where people perhaps care more how things are done, not just that they get done, where people prefer a less paternalistic approach, perhaps. So I'm just wondering, do you think world leaders need different qualities today than in the past, and what do you think is important?
Different qualities. I would venture to say what they need to do is they need to listen to what the people actually want, not the damn corporations.
Right.
You know, I mean, okay. You know, this whole thing where a corporation gets a vote as a person, it's just not right. So I think that it's been so bought off by the corporations and that it is no longer representing the people. Right. So I think that's the fundamental change that needs to happen, is they need to listen to the folks at large. And okay. It's not necessarily going to be always what I want it to be, because, you know, it is a democracy.
Right.
So
yeah.
I can go with that, but I don't think they're listening to anybody.
Okay. All right.
That's my two cents for you.
What do you think? What qualities do you think a leader needs?
I think that's a very fair point, the quality about the corruption side being Trump's what seems to be the leadership side, basically who paid the most for this action. But for me, when I listen to you ask the questions and thinking about past leaders, things I voted for, I still believe that they have to show that they are a quality leader. And despite conflict, adversity, challenges, they still have to look like they've got the plan, carry themselves in that nature. Otherwise, it's hard to even believe. So I think the hybrid of these two points of don't look like you've been bought off, however, still show us that you have the backbone and the compassion to still make the right decisions.
Right. What about you?
I think those are both really interesting points, just because I feel like leadership has kind of gotten to be more of a business than anything, where, you know, yes, they are the leader, but they're kind of the CEO, essentially.
Yes.
And
yeah.
They can say these things that they want to do, but they still do have a, you know, quote-unquote board of directors that are going to sit there and say, you probably shouldn't make that decision. You shouldn't make that decision. So, in a way, leadership has gotten to a point where they're almost a business.
It's so. More of a figurehead.
Yeah, exactly. Your figurehead. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Dwight E. Eisenhower said the supreme quality for leadership is unquestionably integrity. Without it, no real success is possible, no matter whether it is on a section gang, a football field, in an army, or in an office. There seems to be a creeping acceptance that the means justify the ends, particularly if this can be kept out of the public eye. So I'm wondering how important unwavering integrity is to you in a leader, or do you see that as idealistically impossible for a leader?
I think now with so many media channels, it could be very difficult to hide the lack of integrity, right? Because somebody could basically bring this to light very quickly. And that might make it even harder, whether it was a substantiated claim or not.
But it's easier to smear people, that's
yeah, so,
true,
so
too.
Yeah. Where I was going with that was that same channel of you could basically tear somebody down so much faster.
Yeah.
But
so,
interestingly enough, you see that happen all the time, and they don't care.
And they still get
they don't care. I mean, you know, the politicians or the leaders. You know, you look at the Jon Stewart show where he will talk to somebody that's like, well, here's what this guy said in 2002. And here he is in 2008 completely contradicting what he says in 2002. But here in 2008, he will say, well, look at you straight in the face, say, no, I never said that.
Well, I guess there's a difference between changing your opinion, which
Absolutely.
Is a sign of maturity if it's based on, you know, real things, and then just saying whatever you think people want to hear.
Then admit you changed your opinion.
Right.
Don't say that you never said it.
So that's the integrity part you're saying is lacking.
Yeah. I mean, we all change our opinions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, leaving all this aside of what people are doing, I mean, do you feel like you want somebody with integrity, or do you feel like it's just a game and it's better to have someone who can wheel and deal and play the game?
I think a change of opinion is a completely legitimate thing. You know, obviously, as you're shown new facts, you know, your insights are going to change. And so, yeah, I think some people's opinions will change, but as long as they're open about that and say, yeah, I did say that, and they own up to it, and that's the integrity aspect of it, I think it's okay, but,
I think on your integrity question, you can still have integrity and wheel and deal and play the game. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. Long as you are upfront and honest about what you're doing.
Right. So you can say, I got $2 billion funding from this people, and that means I am going to put forward their agenda, but you should still vote for me because I'm being honest about that.
Okay. That's screwed up. No. but it all depends on where your integrity you know, have you been towing that line the whole way and still got voted in?
Right.
You know?
Yes.
And that's the hard part about, I guess, the integrity game is...
Yeah.
You know,
it's quite difficult, I think, in American politics because, you know, of the way it works, and you need so much money to run.
That's
personally, coming from outside America, I feel like it's impossible not to be corrupt and be in politics. I mean, corrupt in the sense that you are not representing your constituents.
Right.
You are primarily representing whoever funded you.
Your investors.
Because otherwise you wouldn't even be there.
Yeah. Right.
So you may try on the side to help the people who voted for you, but that isn't going to be the first thing you're doing because you can't.
Well, I had a good, interesting conversation with a friend of mine saying how disillusioned I was with Obama and what I thought he was going to be able to do, and he looked at me, he's like, he could not do what he has to do because he wouldn't be here, exactly to your point, without those people that backed him, and he has to pay the piper.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, yeah, that sucks.
Well, there's that, and then I think there's an illusion in our minds how much power the leader of any country actually has.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Well, this whole time, ever since I got a little older, for example, Facebook, you look across the people who post what on Facebook that's politically charged, and you're reminded, well, they weren't that good of a student when I knew them in high school. They probably don't really understand how politics work. This guy really does think the president can do whatever he wants, whenever he wants. Well, they forgot about the whole other side.
Right. The longest the president's going to be there's 8 years.
Right.
Yeah. But the other folks behind the lines, you know, the Cheneys and these guys, they just go change with the administration. They bring going back to same people, right?
They're there until they're gone. Right. So,
Mike Myatt, writing in Forbes magazine about leadership qualities, talks about John Adams, and he lists one of his leadership qualities was the fact that he loved his wife. Myatt says, there is perhaps no greater love story than that of John and Abigail Adams. Abigail was his love, his mentor, his confidant, and he shared everything with her. His marriage with Abigail is perhaps the single greatest factor in his success as a leader. He, as every leader should do, always sought counsel from others, but his most valued counsel just happened to be his best friend and spouse. Adams never operated in a bubble, and neither should you. So I had two questions. You know, how important is a leader's spouse in their leadership potential and execution, do you think? And I guess the wider question of being willing to take counsel from others.
Well, you better take counsel from others. Yeah, you can't operate in the vacuum. And I don't care if it's a sports team, politics, office. You got to have somebody who understands what the way you think, but also can help you step out of that box and think about other challenging factors that you've got going on. You know, I also bias.
I also think that, you know, you can see Abigail Adams as a type of chief of staff in a way, where if you're keeping your chief of staff in the know and, you know, you seek counsel from them, that you're not doing a knee-jerk reaction to what someone else may have said or to what the media is saying. Mm-hmm. You know, things are very thought out. And I think that's kind of the role that Abigail Adams is playing in this situation.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, there's a strong sort of feeling in America, you know, the leader of the free world and all that, you know, that leader has to be very strong. But do you think humility is an important quality in leadership, or do you think it's not got a place when you're the head of a huge country?
I think it's there. It's almost more humanity is more than humility. It's at the bottom of the end of the day, we're not in this for ourselves. We're in this for all of us.
Right.
And that, I think, is a fundamental thing that seems to be missing now. It's so much, it's all about me.
Mm.
And you don't worry about those people over there because they're not really my problem.
Mm.
And it's like, no, whether we want to recognize them or not, we're all in this space together.
Yeah.
And really, the humanity is what needs to come out.
Yes.
And I think about to the past few speeches from the current president, the ones that I felt really engaged in were the ones where that came out. It seemed like he broke off from the actual written speech. The great example, somebody pops out from the crowd and hollers something back and heckles him. And then, oh, he's a human being. He responds back real time with the pushback.
Yeah.
But it's such a fine line as a leader to show a bit of humility, because now you give the opportunity for a weakness to be exposed for the enemies. And in today's current political climate, man, that's all, I don't want to be this way, but Fox News is looking for. Give me one thing and I'll spend 4 hours tomorrow just dissecting that and making it seem like the real big deal.
Yes.
And it has nothing to do with anything, but now my Tuesday is covered, right?
Like,
I got my programming good for Tuesday.
You got that breaking news?
So I think that's where we end up with so many problems in the maturation of politics. Currently is, you can't really show the humility because you end up getting pushed back very aggressively, and then now you have to find a way to follow up your rebuttal to that. It's like we've turned them into robots. And then I wonder how much of that is actually my vote that pushes it towards this direction versus this perceived perception.
Good point. And finally, there's a female talk show host, Rebecca Costa, who has a show called The Costa Report, and she came out recently and said that we should not elect a female president. No comment on who that might be, but should not elect a female president because they couldn't sort out the Middle East, because the Middle East situation is such that, because they don't respect women. I'm just wondering, do you think that's applicable, or is that not something you would consider in whether we should elect a female?
Anytime I've voted for a president, I'm always more concerned with the diplomatic side. How are they going to handle foreign policy, right? And that's what's got me the most scared about, like Trump, for example. I feel like that guy is not really going to make good decisions on the spot.
Right.
But this idea of gender bias, it's fair because this particular area is not going to be conducive towards interacting that way. But does that mean that a president can't be there? So that, I don't know. Personally, I don't think that that necessarily means a president cannot be a female. I don't think gender really plays a part in who can lead the country, but it very well plays a part in how those interactions are going to go.
Right.
Because that particular bias of, no, you can't send a woman here to interact with us, that's not America's fault.
Mm.
No. But we do have to be understanding.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might make it more difficult.
Although someone else I interviewed said, well, men have been doing such a good job so far, let them carry on.
That's exactly where I was going to go next. It may be more difficult, but we screwed it all up too. It's not like we've done really good. So maybe, you know what?
Can't be any worse.
Right. But I mean, realistically, that would not be a consideration in my vote for her.
Okay. And what about you?
I mean, to be honest, I didn't even think about that. I mean, it's now that you do bring that up, yeah, I think foreign policy is huge, obviously, with day-to-day things. But, I mean, I think it's such a 21st, you know, it is a very 21st century way of looking at it, but then you have to realize that most of the world is not on that 21st century mindset that America is in, or, you know, a lot of the westernized countries are in. So to us, it's like, yeah, totally, women should be in office. But when it comes to, yeah, like what Greg was saying, a couple small things when it comes to foreign policy, it's a slippery slope there. But
I guess the problem with that is that if you always are protecting or worried about tipping the status quo, then change never happens.
Right. Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. Because I think that who cares? In my opinion, as long as they're making the right decisions and they have the right people backing them, so on and so forth, that's great. But
plus, the way things are, because we don't have gender equality, 98% of the other people around her will be men.
It's very true.
If it's really going that poorly, we can send a pinch hitter
just
in.
Send one of the guys.
Well, I thought where you were going with the spouse question was actually about, well, could we have a homosexual president? Could it be a woman?
Oh, wow.
From office or a man? And I was thinking a similar thing. Like, maybe it's from because I'm from California. Yeah. I think that's entirely irrelevant.
Right.
But when it comes to foreign policy, maybe some of the foreign powers will not respect or want a deal, and that is a problem.
But
you have to identify
that. To Andy's point, you know, and there are other Western countries that have female leaders.
Been Margaret Thatcher,
right, exactly.
Angela Merkel,
exactly. Exactly. And, you know, it's like, so you just got to deal with it. Yeah. It may make things more difficult, but I don't think it should, at least to me, it doesn't matter as to where my vote would go.
Well, it's like every innovation is fought back with this kind of, you can't do this, you can't do that, and
usually succeeds. So.
And I don't know if that necessarily should be the reason you ever stop.
Yeah.
Usually that means you're on the right track with your innovative theory, right?
So,
and like you said, the men haven't been doing a fabulous job. Maybe it's time to take a seat.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your opinions. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. Thank you to everyone who took part in the On the Street conversations this week. The purpose of this first hour is to try to ask questions that make us think. So I hope that has been your experience listening to this hour. And maybe you've had some ideas yourself about this topic. If you have any comments, please email me, ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. I'd love to hear your opinion. Next up is my special guest from the arts, founder and executive director of the Bahamas International Film Festival, Leslie Vanderpool. The festival has showcased more than 800 films from countries around the world and has attracted such stars as Johnny Depp, Nicolas Cage, Lawrence Fishburne, Daryl Hannah, Sir Sean Connery, Deborah Messing, Sidney Poitier, Danny Glover, and many more. So I'm looking forward to talking to Leslie and finding out how one would go about getting such a phenomenal international film festival off the ground. Remember also, you can visit the website, itsaquestionofbalance.com, to listen to previous podcasts. I'll see you after the break.